Shri Rajovacha. Maharaj Parikshit said. Samaha. Equal. Priyaha. Beloved. Surit. Friend. Brahman. O Brahmana Shukadeva. Bhutanam. Toward all living entities. Bhagavan, the Supreme Lord, Vishnu, Swayam, himself, Indrasya, of Indra, Arte, for the benefit, Katam, how, Daichan, the demons, Avadit, killed, Vishamaha, partial, Yata, as if. Translation, King Parikshit inquired, my dear Brahmana, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, being everyone's well-wisher, is equal and extremely dear to everyone. How then did he become partial like a common man for the sake of Indra and thus kill Indra's enemies? How can a person equal to everyone be partial to some and inimical to others? So, purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. In the Bhagavad Gita, in the 9th chapter, text 29, the Lord says, Samoham sarva bhuteshu name dvesho sti na priyaha. I am equal to everyone, no one is dear to me, nor is anyone my enemy. In the previous canto, however, it has been observed that the Lord sided with Indra by killing the demons on his account. Hataputra diti shakra parshni grahena vishnuna. Therefore, the Lord was clearly partial to Indra, although he is the super soul in everyone's heart. The soul is extremely dear to everyone, and similarly, the super soul is also dear to everyone. Thus, there cannot be any faulty action on the part of the super soul. The Lord is always kind to all living entities, irrespective of form and situation, yet he took the side of Indra just like an ordinary friend. This is the subject of Parikshit Maharaja's inquiry. As a devotee of Lord Krishna, he knew very well that Krishna cannot be partial to anyone. But when he saw that Krishna acted as the enemy of the demons, he was somewhat doubtful. Therefore, he posed this question to Shukadeva Goswami for a clear answer. A devotee cannot accept that Lord Vishnu has material qualifications. Maharaj Parikshit knew perfectly well that Lord Vishnu, being transcendental, has nothing to do with material qualities, but to confirm his conviction, he wanted to hear from the authority Shukadeva Goswami. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, Samasya katam vaisham yam. Since the Lord is equally disposed towards everyone, how can he be partial? Priyasya katam asureshu prit yudvavaha. The Lord, being the super soul, is extremely dear to everyone. Why then should the Lord display unsympathetic behavior toward the asuras? How is this impartial? Suradascha katam teshvasal hardam. Since the Lord says that he is suradam sarvabhutanam, the well-wisher of all living entities, how could he act with partiality by killing demons? These questions arose in the heart of Parikshit Maharaj, and therefore he inquired from Shukadev Goswami. So, Shri Rajavacha Samapriya Surit Brahman Bhutanam Bhagavan Swayam Indrasyarte Katam Daityam Avatid Vishamo Yata. So, Om Gana Timirandasya Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshur Unmeditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So this is a very interesting question. It involves one branch of philosophy, and that branch is called theodicy. It's an important term, because I'm going to explain why it's important for our preaching. Theodicy basically means the justice of God. You know, is God just? Just like you see, at least in Europe, when they have a depiction of Lady Justice, what do they show? Has anyone ever seen Lady Justice holding the scale? But what is on her eyes? Her eyes are tied because she's what?
Impartial.
Impartial. So you see that like in Europe and also maybe even here too. I'm not sure if you have that. But that India too is the same thing.
In India, it's translated Andhakanu.
She's blind, yeah. She's blind, yeah. Yeah, she's blind. It's blind justice, yeah. So just like when you have a court case, if someone has a what we call a conflict of interest, you know what a conflict of interest is? Conflict of interest means, let's say I have a court case against Apple Computer, and I'm the judge, and I own like 2,000 shares of Apple Computer. Then what happens? I what's called recuse myself. You heard of this word, recuse? That's another word. We're teaching you English now. So recuse means basically you take yourself out of the case. You say, I recuse myself. That's a technical legal word. I take myself out of the case because, you know, I have something to gain or lose by the decision that I may make. So even in the corporate world, you're supposed to declare your conflicts of interest. And sometimes, if you don't declare, you could lose your job or get arrested and things like that, especially in a place called Wall Street. You ever heard of Wall Street? Mm-hmm. No, you don't know what Wall Street is. Everybody knows what it is. That's where the stock market is, you know. So, because if there's insider trading, conflicts of interest, and things like that, it's just very bad. So, as far as the Supreme Lord is concerned, he basically has nothing to gain from whatever he does, which is interesting. Whereas we have something to gain. You know, in each and every situation, we balance the pluses and minuses. Just like if you make decisions in the corporate world, you have this, you go through this thought process where you do the plus, minuses, and interesting things. Anyone ever do that? Like when you have in the corporate world? Corporate analysis. You know, it's an analysis there's actually these programs, computer programs that do it for you. I mean, you put in your pluses, minuses, and interesting points. And so, but for Krishna, because he is, self-sufficient, aptakama, these are the descriptions given in the Bhagavatam, Krishna, aptakama means he can take care of his own desires. You know, whereas we need someone else, if we want something, if I want to eat, then I'm dependent on Tilakini. Where is she? Oh, she went to the temple, so no eating today. So, so you know, it's just like, and so then I get aggravated because I can't eat. So in other words, I'm dependent on someone for everything I do. I mean, for the air that I'm breathing, I'm dependent on Vayu and, you know, other things. For the electricity, I'm dependent on the power company and ultimately the sun. The sun is the source of the energy. We're dependent on Vivaswan. We have all these 33 million demigods we're dependent on, right? Actually, if one wants to worship the demigods, they should worship all 33 million. They'd have a pretty big altar, isn't it? Like 33 million, can you imagine that? There's demigods, I mean, there's minor demigods and major demigods. There's demigods that control even your digestion, the passing of the stool, the hearing process, the opening of the eyes, because the prana, you know. So just like we were talking last night, how when Vayu got upset, he stopped all the air in the universe and then no one could breathe. So in other words, we're absolutely dependent, let's say, on our mother, our father, the government here, the police department. I mean, we can go down the list. Therefore, it's described in ordinary circumstances, we have so many debts. You know, we have a debt to society, a debt to our country. That's why people join the army or something like that. They have a debt to their country. They have a debt to their family. Isn't everyone feels they have a debt to their mother or father? And so it's a big thing. You know, we're all, so in other words, how we act determines what we get. Do you understand what I'm talking about? Like if you don't work, some of you have jobs, right? What happens? You don't get paid, but then what happens after that? What? Well, what does that mean? You mean you get kicked out of your flat, you lose your house, you can't eat, your wife leaves you. Unless she's someone like some puranic personality who remains chaste to you in spite of not feeding her and getting her saris. Like Prabhupada said, to keep the wife happy, you have to get what? And what else? Jewelry. So then your wife is unhappy. She makes your life miserable, even if she stays with you. So in other words, you're dependent on your wife. You're dependent on your job. So it's like a real entanglement in this material world. Whereas Krishna, Optikama means he wants something, and it happens like that. It's like that old story of what, Aladdin's lamp. You know, you know that story? You rub the lamp and the genie comes out and he says, "Your wish is my desire." Or in the modern philosophy, I don't know if you've read this book or seen this movie, they call it The Secret. Anyone's heard about that? Yeah. A very famous book that if you really want something, you'll get it. Right? No, you've read this book or heard about it?
Yes, I heard about it.
It's a modern hippie philosophy, a version of the hippie philosophy. And there was this movie about it. I mean, I watch it. Normally, I don't watch movies, but it's, I had to find out what it's about. I didn't read the book because it's boring. But the point but the point is that if you really want something, you think about it and meditate it enough, it'll come. The universe is your Aladdin's genie. That's how it's depicted in the movie. You saw that movie?
Yes.
Yeah, isn't that true? You know, the universe is, you know, whatever you want. And so in the movie, they show this boy who really wants a bicycle, right? And he's dreaming about his bicycle. Dreaming. And then, you know, the next day he opens the door and there's his new bicycle. And there was a man who really wanted a sports car, right?
This crack. Sofa
yeah, we'd see, he'd sit on his sofa and and then the sports car came. I mean, of course, there's something to be said about positive thinking. We're not advocating negative thinking. But, however, things don't work like that. Because the reason is there's this thing called karma. You know, the karma, you'll get things if you have good karma. And if you don't have bad karma, you could want a sports car all you want, you know, for millions of years. And all you're going to get is a Yugo, you know. You know what that is, because he's from Europe. That's a Yugoslavian car that breaks down after 2 kilometers, even when it's new. You still see them in Yugoslavia and Serbia today, you know, because I go there sometimes. So, in other words, we don't get what we want. I mean, if we got what we wanted all the time, it'd be a pretty nice world. But Krishna, the reason Krishna gets what he wants is because he can really create things just by himself. And therefore, he's not interested in anything in the mature world. There's like the story of Nara Narayan Rishis. They were meditating, and then Indra thought he would disturb them, just like we talked about how Indra sends down cupidettes to disturb people, you know, like people who really, like Vibhandaka, the story we told from the Ramayana. So Indra was also looking at Naranarayan Rishi and thinking they want to become Indra. So he thought, you know, I gotta do something. So he sent down some apsaras. This is during the Bhagavatam. Sent down some apsaras along with Cupid and springtime. Cupid is called Ananga because doesn't have any limbs because he was burnt to ashes by Lord Shiva. So he's invisible. You can't tell when he's coming. I mean, if you could tell, you could hide. You understand? Like, people fall in love like this. And Cupid has 5 arrows of form, taste, smell, you know, the objects of the senses. So Indra sent him down along with the dancing girls, the apsaras, from the heavenly planets, and they all started to dance. And springtime, he sent down personified spring too, and the Bhagavatam describes this. And they all started to dance in front of Narayanarayan Rishis. And basically, Narayanarayan Rishi just yawned. And then what Narayanarayan Rishi did, does anyone know? He created a more beautiful girl. A bunch of them. And one of them was named Urvasi. Urvasi is actually the most attractive of all the apsaras. So he created from his own body. He was just sitting there yawning at Indra's display. Oh, you got anything better to show me? And then Urvasi, and then he said to Indra, take one back with you, you know. It's actually a funny story. And Indra took Urvasi back. And so, you know, they'd all committed an offense in Narayana Rishi. So that proves the point that Krishna is independent, absolutely, positively independent. And, you know, we're absolutely, positively dependent, as I pointed out before. And another reason that Krishna's independent is that all of his energies, Parasha Shaktir Vividaiva Shuyate Svabhavaki Jnana Balakriyacha, all his energies are first-class servants. A first-class servant does what the master wants without being asked. A second-class servant does what the master wants after being asked. A third-class servant does what the master wants but with a bad mood. And a tenth-class, you know, the guru says, could you get me this? Daruka? Yes! Bad face. And then a tenth class doesn't even do what the master wants. So all of Krishna's energies, in addition to Krishna being able to create anything he wants just by wishing it, aptakama, he swore out, then all of Krishna's energies are actually first class servants. So he doesn't even ask, and you know, people are serving him in the spiritual world. He doesn't have to put a request in, send an email on his computer, you know, or text, you know, like that. It's just like, it's like when I come here, I have to put a request in, you know, what's your diet? You know, here's my diet, latest diet. But Krishna doesn't do that. It's just his wish. Your wish is my desire, like the genie said. So, therefore, to accuse Krishna of having some partiality is nonsense. And it indicates someone has some doubts. So Krishna is like that, the blind justice, you know, the lady justice who is just the scales and everything like that. So then why, the question of theodicy, you know, the justice of God, let's just put it in the material perspective. As they say, why do bad things happen to good people and good things happen to bad people? That's the question that many theologians have given. So it's bewildering to people. Therefore, many people lose faith. I mean, if you look, for example, at the horrendous things that have happened in the world, we were mentioning before that within the space of 300 years, 80 million Hindus were killed in India by the Mughals. 80 million. I mean, that's a Holocaust. And then you have the Holocaust, the World War II Holocaust with Hitler. And then you have all these people suffering in different countries around the world. I mean, it's just really horrible. I mean, Afghanistan and Iraq, and what to speak of some of the African countries where the government is basically, you know, exploitative in many ways, and they're taking all the people's money and sending it to Swiss bank accounts, isn't it? And so you look at the world, or you go to a hospital, for example, and you see people suffering. What did they do? He was a good man. Or a little child, even worse, is a little child, little baby. What did he do? You know, this poor little baby has this disease, that, or even a preemie. You know what a preemie is? That means a premature, where they somehow or other he's born like premature, and they have to put him in an incubator. You know what an incubator is? You don't cook in an incubator. That's what So an incubator is where, you know, a premature baby is put in, and because the baby's not ready to live in the outside world. So sometimes they're suffering tremendously, or they have some disease like that. And there was I remember one of our devotees had a child that had, I forget that disease where the spinal cord doesn't properly develop.
Spinal bifida.
Spinal bifida. Because they don't take the proper vitamins during folic acid. Right. So, and you just look at, what did the baby do? You know, what did they do? And then, of course, we have an analysis that keeps us from becoming atheistic. We say, first of all, there's karma. But that's one thing. There's karma. The baby did. The baby is not actually a baby. The baby did something in his last life, and he's getting a reaction for it, right? That's, you know, it's a pretty heavy thing to think about. And you don't want to go around telling people that generally. Like, a mother has seen her child suffering. You say, well, that's his karma. You know, you don't do that. It's very cruel. You know, if I see you in the hospital, let's say, and you're just like in pain, you have some chronic disease, that's your karma, Prabhu. You know, you're not actually a good counselor if you do that. You know, but devotees, I've seen devotees, immature devotees do that. Everything is your karma. You got an accent, that's your karma. You broke your leg, your karma, Prabhu. You know, I got bit by a dog. It's your karma, Maharaj. Yeah, that people said that, you know, when I got bit by that dog in Fiji. It was right after an initiation. Oh my God. And they said, that's your disciple's karma. Probably was, I mean. So, in one sense, we can say that, you know, that may be true. That is true. But there's a higher point behind it. It's not that just... Like we have in the Hebrew scriptures, you have this thing, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth type of thing. So you do something, get punished. You know, God wants to see you suffer because that's more of a Christian conception. That God, that they have these Christian tracts sometimes, not the bona fide Christian, the Christian tracts sometimes that they show you just didn't surrender to Jesus Christ in this lifetime. Therefore, you're frying in the in hell, and God is looking. He said, you didn't make it, boy, you know, so suffer. So it's not, you know, there is karma. There is karma. But we have to understand another branch of philosophy to understand the justice of God. And that branch is called teleology. These are big words for you. I mean, what is the purpose of everything? So in other words, what is the purpose of karma? Let's not just take karma itself and say, hey, you're suffering because of your karma. But what is the purpose of karma? Or what is the purpose of the material world? Or what is the purpose of suffering? Does anyone know what the purpose of the material world is? To fill your desires. No, that's not the ultimate purpose. It does that. That's a function. No, not the purpose of the material world is to suffer. Oh, you got it wrong.
What's the purpose? To remind us for religion.
To reform us. To revive. So if you see everything in that larger perspective, then everything makes sense. Even if you just see karma without understanding that, then it's just like, hey, you know, just make a mistake and you get smashed for it. You know, I didn't know that eating McDonald's was bad, so why do I have to become a cow, you know? Here I am, you know. Moo. You know, so there's a reason you learn lessons. Karma, or the reactions from karma, are gradual lessons that you learn from one lifetime to another. I mean, it's just like going to school, that you go from one class to another, you know, class one, two, three, four, five. Then you go to the university, then postgraduate, post-postgraduate, and like that, and eventually you graduate. So there's lessons learned, like in each and every species of life. There's a lesson that the cockroach is learning. There's a lesson that the gorilla is learning. There's a lesson that human beings are learning. Anyway, so, and it's one lifetime to another. So another question is, the people give, is that if you can't remember your past lives, what good was the lesson? Well, the remembrance is there on the subtle body. You don't have to have conscious remembrance to learn a lesson. And I'll give you a practical example of that. Most of you know how to walk, right? Do you remember learning how to walk? I don't. I mean, I'm sure that at one point my mother was holding my hands and I was flopping over on the floor. And, you know, then I stood up again. Then I went down again. I don't remember any of that stuff. But still, I learned it. And my what I learned, I'm using today. I'm able to walk. I'm able to read. I don't remember any of these things, like learning to read, learning to walk. Nothing like that. I do remember learning Krishna consciousness, though. Because it was actually ecstatic with Prabhupada. So, so normally, we don't remember our how we learned a particular lesson. And so what to speak of in a previous life, because what happens is, from lifetime to lifetime, the subtle body becomes shaped. And you carry your conceptions of life from one body, gross body, to another, just like the what carries the what in the Bhagavad Gita. There's a, yeah, the air carries the aroma. So you carry your conceptions. So the subtle body is actually being shaped by experiences within this material world. And you're learning gradually. You're trying out 8,400,000 different types of bodies. You know, maybe I'd be happy as a whatever, you know, as a bird. It's like sometimes the children, they want to play like Spider-Man or something like that. You heard of Spider-Man? So I asked one of the children the other day, you know, what's your favorite game? Spider-Man. I'd like to be a spider. You know, because they see this film of like, anyway, people going through the streets or hanging through a spider. So you want to try different things out. And after you try them out, you know, maybe being a spider was not a good idea. Or maybe being a dog. Just like we used to preach to people when we went on Sankyar Dog. And he said, you know, if you're not careful, you become a dog in your next life. And they said, that would be nice. Because I don't have to go to work. I can sit in front of the TV. They're thinking American Dog. Or even in Mumbai, there's people who take care of their dogs. We walk on Juhu Beach, and the people walking with their ecstatic poodles, you know, with the manicures on them. You know what a poodle is? A French poodle? You know, they have the fluffed up hair here, fluffed up here, yeah. And they take them, even in India now, they have dog shows. Did you know that? Can you imagine taking your dog to a show? You got a nice dog. What a beautiful dog you have. I know they have it here. They have it everywhere now.
It's a lot of money on that.
I know. On the dogs, they have dog psychiatrists. They do. Dog beauty parlors, you know. So, anyway, so people think, wow, it'd be nice to be a dog. So you try it out for one birth, and you try a cat birth, and you try this birth, and then 8,400,000, and then you come to the human species of life, and then you act like a dog as a human being. So then you become a dog again. Or you eat meat, and then you become a cow, or you become a fish, or a chicken, like Prabhupada said that. Do you have this KFC here? Prabhupada said that every chicken that was sold in this KFC store, the founder Acharya of KFC, his name is Colonel Sanders. I don't know if you ever heard that name. But he's famous. He will take a chicken birth and death. So in other words, you may be eating Colonel Sanders when you go, not you, but I mean someone may be eating Colonel Sanders when they go. So in other words, so getting back to the justice thing, there's a lesson, there's a reason. It's not just that I did something bad and I'm getting the reaction, but I'm learning something. So the punishment is there to reform you, to help you learn. And not only the punishment, but every experience you have in this world, and this is important for us as devotees too, that every experience we have is a learning, should be taken as a learning experience. So what I do is whenever something happens, you know, whether it's bad or good, or like, I mean, I'll give you an example of this dog bite, because that was something. So the dog bit me. So I thought immediately, what is Krishna teaching me? Of course, first teaching me, you walk with a stick next time you go. that's an obvious lesson. And then, but there were other lessons too that came out of that one lesson. Another lesson was, my initial reaction was to get angry at the dog. So Krishna's teaching me, well, he teaching me compassion. He's teaching me that even if someone bites me, then I have to be their well-wisher. Because this is part of advancement in spiritual life. Jata Shatrava, like the, one of the qualities of a devotee is, according to Lord Kapila Deva, is a Jata Shatrava, which means he whose enemy is never born. Like you have Prahlad Maharaj, his father attempted to kill him in so many ways, yet Prahlad Maharaj was the well-wisher of his father. You have Haridas Thakur being beaten in 22 marketplaces. He was the well-wisher of the people who were beating him. You have Jagai and Madai, you know, Madai attacking Lord Nityananda, and Lord Nityananda was the well-wisher of Madai and Jagai, right? So I immediately, you know, after the initial anger, I'd like to kill the dog. But, you know, that's the initial response you get. After that, I thought, I have to be compassionate. So the next day, I brought some puris for the dog. And then the dog offered obeisances. They said, my apologies that you're loading. Not really. I mean, so next, you know, I thought, you know, I have to be compassionate and spiritually conscious and desirous of this dog's spiritual upliftment. Instead of thinking, I curse this dog. You know, the natural response is, I curse the dog. The dog will suffer because I'm a Vaishnava. You know, how can he take the dust of my feet in this way? You know, what kind of disciple is he? So therefore, you know, there's a lesson. In other words, what was the lesson? And another lesson came about because of that too. So Krishna has all these interesting arrangements. Another interesting thing was that, you know, I went to the police station to report the dog. You know, the dog had bitten me. So what happened is that the police person was a member, a Fijian person. And then, they're very nice. And I was thinking, after meeting and interacting with the police person, oh, they're so nice. Because, you know, in Fiji, we have mostly like the Indian people in the temple, and you don't meet many Fijians. But this was an educated Fijian person. I was thinking, how nice, why aren't we preaching to these people? So Krishna was also showing me that, you know, you should make some effort to interact and bring people who are of different races to Krishna consciousness. You shouldn't do the easy preaching. It's like, we just preach to the people from India, it's like preaching to the choir. You know, you ever hear that statement before? Preaching to the choir means like if a minister is preaching in the church, and there's a choir there, those are the people who sing. So, no, he's preaching to the congregation, not the choir. The choir is just already, you know, they're sold out. You know, just natural. Like everyone who is from India background, they're naturally Krishna conscious. I mean, they have names like Govinda and Ram and things like that, Ravan, you know, different nice names. So they or Chetty or something like that. Or anyway, different names, or smiley face one. Hasmukh. That's a nice name, you know, smiley face. Or gold merchant. Sony. Or Hiralal, diamond merchant. Motilal. So, but then Krishna was showing, hey, these are nice people too. So there was another lesson to be. What I'm pointing out is there's a lesson. So ultimately, I mean, there were other lessons too. Ultimately, I saw that there's a reason that things happen that way. And other times too, you know, my own Krishna consciousness. So sometimes people turn against you, you know, even like disciples or friends or well-wishers. You know, friends become enemies, enemies become friends. I'm sure we've all experienced that before. You know, brothers or sisters become your enemies, and they turn against you, and then you can choose to learn the lesson, or you can choose to get angry at God, or you can choose to get angry at the person. You have all these different choices when you're confronted with a lesson. So what I usually do, you know, when some painful situation happens, instead of sitting and feeling sorry for myself, you know, painful things do happen in this world, and then you sit and you engage in just like, oh, I'm so sad. How can life be so miserable? Krishna doesn't love me. or this person is so nasty. Instead, when there's some pain, I just take it as an opportunity to chant more. You know, I go for a long walk and I chant more japa, because Krishna's bringing me closer, taking shelter of his holy name. So the point I'm making, it's a very important point, is that Krishna is equal to everyone, because whatever he does is to fulfill the teleological, there's a big word again, the purpose. Teleos, it's a Latin word. It means purpose. Teleological means the study of purposes. Everyone understands that. And there's different branches of philosophy. And that's one. Teleology means the study of purposes. Ontology means the study of someone's essence. Anyway, so I don't want to give a whole philosophy class. So if you understand the purpose of everything, then you see how Krishna is equal. Because when Krishna kills the demons, he's giving them his mercy. And they're getting liberated. And they're getting his association. And sometimes they rectify themselves. And sometimes they don't. Sometimes they just go to the Brahmajyoti. And then they have to come back. They have to come back and use their mobile phones again. But in any case, it's a gradual process of bringing people, because becoming Krishna conscious is a multi-life experience, a multi-lifetime experience, and you have to see it in terms of that. You know, these different experiences we're going through, different traumatic experiences or different good experiences we're going through. So in this way, we can explain what is being stated here, or the question, we can answer the question that Parikshit Maharaj is giving to Shukadev Goswami. You know, why does God appear to be partial? Either through the law of karma, or through his interactions with demons, or his interaction with devotees. He's not. Samoham sarvabhuteshu namedvisho stinapriha. Krishna says, I have no enemies, I have no friends. But whoever is a friend to me, I'm a friend to him. Or yeyatamam prapajante tamsatthaiva bhajamyaham. As they approach me, I reciprocate accordingly. So it's a reciprocal thing. Krishna is completely equal. But everything he does is out of compassion for us. Everything, 100%, is for our benefit. Remember that when something happens to you. Everything that happens is for your benefit. Not every rascal thing you do is for your benefit. That's another thing, you know, you say, oh, it happened, I walk into the bar tonight, that's for my benefit. I'm learning about the material world, you know. No, that's, everything you do may or may not be for your own benefit, but everything Krishna does that's outside of our control is for our benefit. And it's hard to understand. Sometimes it may take a few years to understand why something happened to us a few years ago. It's just like, but looking back, you know, I can see in my own life why things happened, you know, that were just like intensely painful. I can see why Krishna arranged it. And it's called retrospect. Or in sports terms, it's called Monday morning quarterbacking. I don't know if you ever, anyway, that's a football, American football term. That, you know, after the game, you understand why things happen. Or you thought, maybe I should have done that. So this explains this particular point that Parikshit Maharaj is bringing up. Does everyone understand that? Any questions or comments?
So how can we not do that? What has Krishna arranged for us? Or what, like, suppose, like you said, that, okay, I'll go to the bar. So
that Krishna has not arranged that yet.
So how can we know that whatever is happening is that Krishna wants that?
Anything that's outside of our control. A lot of things are within your control. I mean, of course, we have to see if it's actually outside of our control. Like, if you do something foolish, let's say you don't put petrol in your car, and the car runs out of petrol, it's not that Krishna wanted you to run out of petrol. You understand? That was in your control. Like, Prabhupada gave the example. There were some devotees who died in an automobile accident, and because they fell asleep while driving in the middle of the night. And devotees said to Prabhupada, Krishna's mercy, and Prabhupada said, no, it's their foolishness. See, Prabhupada said they had to take a birth again because they were foolish. So you make some mistake, don't blame it on Krishna. However, you know, most things are outside of our control. like the weather or whatever is outside of our control. So that those things are meant. You know, what things, you have to see that everything happens to you throughout the day that's outside of your control is actually being arranged by Krishna. There's something to learn from every experience. Painful experiences are very hard, but there's something to learn from those experiences or from karmic reactions. I mean, it's really hard to understand that in terms of like tremendous disasters, like tsunamis and things like an earthquakes. I mean, why did that happen? What's to be learned? Of course, sometimes it's just you don't build your building in an earthquake zone. Or in Fiji, you know, you don't put your stores in a flood zone. Don't blame Krishna on that, isn't it? I mean, everybody knows that Nandi floods. It's not the first time, right? But then people keep building their stores again. Or in Lhasa, a similar thing happens. You know, so there is a personal accountability for those particular things. It's not you say, it's an act of God. No, you build your store, you put your temple on high ground. Just like in Singhitoka, our temple is so high, if it flooded there, the whole world would be underwater, right? Isn't it true? Yeah, well, not only Fiji Island, the whole world. I mean, it's like several hundred meters above sea level. Can you imagine the sea rising like 400 or 500 meters? Not quite that much. I mean, about 200, 100 meters. If this whole sea rose that much, 90% of the world would be underwater, except for some of the mountains. So obviously, you know, you don't build your house in a flood zone. So that's your responsibility. But, you know, things do happen. You know, you get diseases, and it's not your fault. Of course, you have to, you know, there's certain responsibility we have. Like, as far as diseases, we follow a certain diet and exercise, too. It's not that we just, like, eat like pigs and then blame Krishna for the heart disease that occurs afterwards. You know, it's Krishna's fault I have a bypass surgery, you know. No. You ate fatty food for the last 30 years. In spite of that sannyasi telling you to stop it. You understand? So there is personal responsibility. So any other questions or comments?
Guru Maharaj, yeah. I had one experience. I wonder why the child was born. And I delivered one baby about 15 years ago.
Yeah.
This baby came from an Indian family. No lower limbs below knee and nothing below near. I mean,
no arms and everything.
Yeah. That's
usually because they were taking that medicine, formaldehyde, something like that. Anyway, there was a medicine they used to give pregnant ladies. It caused the arms not to grow. In the, I mean, they didn't know it would cause that.
There was a
feeding pill. Yeah, there's other medicine. Like, you have all this wonderful modern medicine that they discover 15 years later creates all sorts of side effects, you know. You know, your eyes pop out, and you're not quite that like that. So, you know, why did it happen? That's that individual baby's fate. You know, there was some reason that they did something in the past, and they have some lesson to learn. Like if you're cruel to people in this lifetime, let's say I beat my disciples or something like that. Well, I'll give you a funny example from the Mahabharata. Once upon a time, there was a dog that was being beaten by a Brahmin. Actually, in Ramayana. It's a Ramayana story. There was a dog that was being beaten by a Brahmin. And so the dog went to see Lord Ram. And the dog complained. This Brahmin, he's beating me. And Lord Ram was saying, is that true? You know, he investigated and came out to be true. There were witnesses and everything like that. So even a dog is entitled to justice in Lord Ram's kingdom. So they were thinking, what should be done with this Brahmin to punish him? And the dog said, because in those days dogs could talk too. The dog said, I have an idea. Why don't you put him in charge of the Hare Krishna temple? No, the ashram, yeah, anyway. The ashram. And everyone was looking at, why should he reward him, make him temple president? After, you know, what he's done, why should you reward the Brahmin? And they looked around and they said, well, Ram said, well, let the dog explain. And the dog said, dog uvacha. The dog said, the reason I'm a dog is I used to be temple president too. because I'm responsible, you know, temple president is responsible, like a king is responsible for any sinful activities that occur in the kingdom. So I was responsible, and look where I ended up. So I want the same thing to happen to him. That's the only way he's going to learn. Not to beat a dog, it's to become a dog. And the only way to become a dog is to become temple president. No, there are other ways too. So some of you heard that story before. That's a famous story. So in other words, there something happened in the past. There's some lesson that soul has to learn. I'm not going to heavy out its parents or heavy the kid out later in life and say that's your karma. But I will say we should learn from every experience. I mean, there is karma. I'm not denying that. It is karma. But beyond the karma, behind the karma, the foundation of the karma, is the purpose of the karma. Try to remember that. If you don't remember the purpose, then even the law of karma appears very harsh. You won't understand karma until you understand purposes. You don't understand the universe. So that's why teleology is extremely important. Modern scientists, of course, say there's no purpose to anything. Everything is happening by chance. Ultimately, there's this, they say the latest theory is the string theory. Anyone's heard of the string theory? No scientists here? You know, they started investigating the particles. You know, like then there was the atom, and then the proton, the neutron, and the electrons. And then they go further on, and they discover more particles. And finally they say, actually, there's no matter. Everything is just vibrating strings. No one's heard of this before? Just see, your lives are wasted.
Wave theory.
What?
The wave theory.
No, it's beyond that.
Beyond that.
No, the wave theory is something different. But this is like, everything is like these tiny strings of energy, and they vibrate in different directions. And that causes us to perceive that there's something solid out here, but it's actually just these energetic strings. It's an interesting theory. And Krishna just makes the scientists act like jackasses sometimes. They come up with all these theories, and you know, then you ask, where did the strings come from? Even if you accept that, where did the strings go? And then they'll come up with something else, where the strings came from. The strings came from violins, you know, violin strings. I'm just being funny. So, because they can't come out to the cause of all causes, sarva karana karanam. So, anyway, so the atheistic scientists say that there is no reason. Krishna himself says that everything is caused by, like he said, sex desire in the Bhagavad Gita. In other words, everything is just caused by the interaction of the material elements, and really, there's no consciousness. It's just like we're thinking we're conscious. Of course, there's a famous philosopher, Descartes, who had a different idea, cogito ergo sum. I think, therefore I am. Because once you're thinking, you know you're conscious. But the scientists deny even that. They said, your being conscious is an illusion. You're not conscious. You're just a computer. But actually, if you say your being conscious is an illusion, that's a contradiction in itself. Because if something's an illusion, you're also conscious. You understand? Because if you're not conscious, how can you be an illusion? You just think you're conscious. But actually thinking you're conscious means you're conscious. You can't get away from it. So we are conscious entities, but many modern scientists, I mean, there's atheistic scientists, maybe you know some of their names, who write books and books and books about how there's no God. There's one of them, and I'm not going to mention his name. He's completely crippled. Yeah, and he's in a wheelchair. He can't even move. He has to speak through an artificial device and, you know, type like that. And he says there's no God. because he did this to me. Well, maybe God did it to you because your attitude towards him. And you're going to learn, you know, when you see Yamaraj, that you're going to learn there is a God. Yeah, he's very famous, yeah. Yeah. Dawkins, yeah. So, I didn't even want to mention his name. It's pious to mention that name. So really, there is a God and there is a purpose to everything. Everything has a purpose. But it takes some intelligence to figure out what that purpose is. It takes the reading of the Shastras to understand. The purpose is to bring us back to our real home, the spiritual world, so we can be with Krishna and be eternally blissful, full of knowledge, and all those things, Satchitananda. That's the purpose. It's like the purpose of a prison is to reform the prisoners. Nowadays it doesn't do such a good job, right? The prisoners have such a good time in prison. I remember I visited, you know, I was doing some prison preaching, and the prisoners, they had exercise rooms, you know, and a theater there, and a temple that was nicer than any temple we have in ISKCON, you know. We were preaching in there, and they had this nice organ in the church. So I got a chance to play the organ and everything. I said, wow, this is a nice temple. And they even allowed the devotees to have, you know, the devotees who were prisoners, they had deities, you know, Gornatai deities there, Mridanga drum. I said, why would anyone want to leave? You know, they get, and people actually get so adjusted to prison, they actually want to go back, isn't it? If they spend like about 20 years in prison, you know, they don't have any life on the outside. So the purpose of prison should be to reform people so they become honest citizens. And so the purpose of the material world is to reform us. So sometimes there's a necessity of a little harsh punishment. Like in prison they have what, the solitary confinement sometimes? Where the prisoner just gets put in a cell and he's not well behaved. Okay, so any other questions? It's getting late, actually. Yeah.
Most of the people, after realizing a certain level of knowledge, they accommodate to the physical difficulties or mental difficulties. But when it comes to association with the close relations, like your family relations,
yeah,
then at that time, it gives more pain, and then people do certain things that they do not want to do, or it's not the based on dharma. So how, what's the right process in that way? One is to educate the rest of the family.
Right. Yeah, well, the interesting thing about family relationships or friendship relationships is that we have more expectations out of those relationships. So let's translate the word expectations into demands. When you demand someone or expect something from someone and you don't get, what happens? You get angry. You know, like the Gita says, Jayate Vishak Pum Sam Sangastesha Pajayate Sangat Sanjayate Kama Kama Kuru Pajayate. In other words, you contemplate, you think that my husband, my wife, my children, they're supposed to do this for me. They have to do it for me. I mean, I don't think, like if I meet a stranger on the street, I'm not going to get angry with him if he doesn't, you know, wash my feet or something like that. you know, it's just normal, stranger, but, you know, if a disciple doesn't act properly, then, because you have some more expectations. So, let's say between a husband and wife, the husband expects the wife to roll perfect chapatis all the time and have a sweet smile on her face when he comes home from work. And that... What is that?
No.
Doesn't work. Yeah, it's a... Or, you know, not wear so many hair curlers in her hair when he comes home from work and look like Medusa from the Greek mythology. So, but you expect that. You know, when someone's a family member, that you're demanding more from them. Because the relationship is not really a loving relationship as it should be. It's interesting that the relationships that are supposed to be loving are the more, in this material world, are the more exploitative. Because it's your duty to do this. You're the wife. You're the husband. You're my father. You're my brother. are. You see that? And so you get angrier with family members than you do with just strangers, because you're trying to use them. The idea is that we should take the opposite of using someone is serving. Serving. So we should try to serve. Like, most violence actually occurs in the home. Did you know that? It's more dangerous to come home and say, "Hi, I'm home," than to walk in the streets in the middle of the night. They walk in the most dangerous area of the city. Say, "I am home." Like that. You know, you get more spankings from your father than you do from a stranger, right? So, when there's more expectations, or you get more guilt trips from your family. You know what a guilt trip is? How could you do this to me? I've done so much for you. I worked my whole life for you. You're killing me. You're going to be responsible for my death. Huh? You get that? I got that when I joined the Hare Krishna movement. My mother said, "You're going to be responsible for killing me. And I'm dying now." And, you know, she's still alive 50 years later. And she's 85 years old, swims 50 laps in a swimming pool, and she hasn't died yet, so, a day. So, strong lady. But, you know, so there's expectations. How can you do this? What you've done? You joined the Hare Krishna movement. You betrayed me. So that's why that occurs in close relationships. But if on the other hand, if we just see the close relationship we have, we're meant to serve. Like, if we're having a marriage today, we're performing a marriage. So if it's explained that you're meant to serve the other person, the husband's meant to serve the wife, and the wife is meant to serve the husband. And there was one interesting story that with Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj, that there was a couple getting married, and the husband asked the Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj, what should our relationship be? And he said, "You should cook for your wife and you should serve your wife." Yeah, the poor guy was thinking, "Now I got a free cook." It's like that, you know, people get married and they expect, you know, someone to iron my clothes and cook. That happens until the first child's born. When the first child is born, then the wife has all the attention on the child, and the poor husband is left there without a servant anymore. That the poor guy is thinking, "What happened? There were so many promises of love, and now she doesn't even remember my name anymore." All she does is pick up that little baby. "Hey, here I am, you know, cook for me." But if we enter into a relationship with service, the idea I'm serving the other person in Krishna's service, then the more we do for them, the happier it makes us. But now we're thinking the more they do for us. And so that happens between brothers. We've seen that. That happens between husband and wife. It happens between sons and mothers or sons and fathers. It's just like, you got to change this whole dynamic into one of service. Gopi Bharata Padakama Vadasa Dasa Dasa. I'm a servant of a servant of a servant. So just like, even in modern days, they say a leader should be a servant leader. That's a common nomenclature. If someone wants to serve properly. Just like here in New Zealand, you have a very nice temple president because Kalasambar serves very nicely. You see him sometimes cleaning the bathrooms in the temple. It's a unique experience. Most of the times people become temple president and they just say, "All right," and they sit behind their desk all day long, press buttons. But, you know, he's serving nicely. So that's an ideal consciousness to have. You understand? Where you're actually serving the devotees. And serving the higher up you get, the more service you should do. And I told the devotees my experience the other day when I was in Fiji. I served during the Ram Navami program. I served out prasadam to the devotees, and it was nice. And I made sure, because normally the devotees would eat first and let the guests eat second, so I was standing guard there too. You know, like they see prasadam, and the poor guests are watching the devotees wolf down the prasadam. So I said, "Ain't gonna happen now. I'm in charge." And I was just watching them very carefully. But it was very nice. I was serving, and the guests were actually very reciprocating very nicely. They were smiling. I said, "This is Mahaprasada." He said, "Oh, thank you very much." And some of the guests, there's actually a picture. One of the guests couldn't believe I was serving. He has his mouth open. Who's that serving me? Yeah, even disciples were there serving. And I thought, I felt very nice. So one becomes a guru, they become servant. That's another service. It's not you become master. If you think you're a guru, you become guru. That's a statement by Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. I think we have to end here because we have a lot of programs today. Okay. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam, ki jai.